Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the latest Ramble Meets with me, Andy Brassel, where our guest is Southampton captain and Denmark midfielder Pierre-Emil Højbjerg. We caught up down the line some weeks back while Pierre was in Copenhagen, where had everything run as expected, he would have been readying himself for a home-based tournament, in a sense, with his home nation, Denmark, and his home city, the capital, set to welcome Euro 2020 group games. He'll have to wait for that, of course, but there was plenty of other stuff to cover. And I had to triple-check with my research that Pierre's only 24, not only because he's got such a wealth of experience from Bayern Munich and the Denmark national team to the Premier League, but because he's so mature, honest, open and engaging on a number of subjects. So we hear about his relationship with Pep Guardiola, what he describes as his own mistakes along the way, and how his late father inspired him. I really enjoyed it, and I really hope you enjoy listening to it too. This is Ramble Meets with Pierre-Emil Højbjerg. So tell us a bit about your situation at the moment. You're at home in Denmark, right? How long have you been home in Denmark for?
So I've been home for a good month now, more than a month, since, when was it? A couple of days before the lockdown in England. I asked the club the permission to travel back to Denmark because my wife has to give birth here in Copenhagen.
Okay.
And she had a couple of things she had to do, you know, with the midwife. There were some nurses she had to speak to, some scans she had to attend to, like getting in the system. And under normal circumstances, we would have traveled to Copenhagen if there wasn't this corona situation. But as the corona situation became more aggressive and a bit more uncertain, then we asked the club, listen, we don't know how it all will look like in the next coming weeks, so maybe we'll, and if Josephine, my wife, then gets problem or any issues, God forbid, you know, with the baby or with the pregnancy, will be close to where she'll give birth, and she'll be comfortable, you know.
And it is an unusual situation to be back in your home country. Of course, you would have been expected to still be playing and playing at the most intense part of the season.
Yeah.
If we go back to the beginning, what are your first memories of starting out playing football in Copenhagen? What are your first memories of football from when you were a small child?
Yeah, here when I was a kid, I think the first memories I got was my parents be a little bit stressed because I had to go to my first football training, and it was in the evening and it was indoor, and I wanted to play with my brother. He's a year older than me, a year and a half. He's born in 94, I'm born in 95, but I wanted to start with him. I didn't want to start alone. But my parents were a little bit stressed because they couldn't attend. So my uncle had to pick us up, and we drive with the bus there, direct from the kindergarten. I remember I left, and I didn't want to play. I didn't want to join in the first day. So I sat on the sideline and just had a look and didn't want to play around. And when I came home, I was actually pretty sure that, yeah, I'm not going again. But then next time when we went again, I fell in love with the game, and since then I never let it go. And it just went step by step and level by level. I just got more intense and more crazy about the sport and the game, and very early I also find my idols in the game. So it was all just one big love for me.
And who were those idols?
Early days, I was really, really a big fan of Ronaldo and Zidane in the early 2000s. Mm. And my first big, big, big memory of football was Zidane's Champions League final goal.
Yeah.
And I remember my father, he had a job where he had to travel a lot to crisis countries in Africa. So one time when he came home, he had a very, very, very fake shirt with Zidane, and the Real Madrid badge was yellow. But I didn't care. It was just so beautiful because it was at that time my idol. So that was my first football shirt. Pretty fake Real Madrid shirt from Sierra Leone or Guinea, one of these countries where he travelled to.
But when you think back to those first couple of times that you played, I mean, my children have got a similar gap between them as you and your brother. And for the younger one, his older brother is his bravery. He always feels a lot braver when his big brother's with him. How important was it to you just to even get into football, to have your brother there?
No, so much, because he was the reason I wanted to start to play football, because he wanted to start to play football. So I joined in actually in his age group, and I remember that the next couple of years, and I spoke with him about it a couple of weeks ago when I spoke to him. I said, yeah, actually, the first couple of years I've always played with the ones who were older than me, so 1 or 2 years older. And that gave me a lot. So when I was 5 to 10, I played with a group age that were 1 to 2 years older. And you know, when you are that age, 1 to 2 years is a lot, you know.
It's huge.
Nowadays, when I'm 24 and I play with a 26-year-old, there's not a big difference. But when you are 7 and play with a 9-year-old, I think there's a big difference. And it's the same when you are 13 and play with a 15-year-old. There can be a big difference. And that's what I did. I played early age with boys who were bigger and stronger and faster than me. So I had to, from day one, just adapt to the better ones, you know?
So at what point in your childhood do you realise that, hey, this could really be something, and this is something I could take all the way, and you go and join up with Bromby, right? When does all that happen? At what age?
So we went, I can't remember when it was, we had a tournament who was a little bit an unofficial, it was an unofficial Denmark Championship Cup, you know, a summer cup, where the best countries in Denmark participated, and some of the Scandinavian teams participated a lot from Sweden and Norway. And I remember we won that tournament, and I played very well. And that was one of the moments when I remember, okay, if the whole Scandinavia is gathered here, and the best players from is gathered here, and I managed to shine through. Then I I didn't tell myself. I never told myself before I signed my professional contract that I will be a professional football player. But okay. I had a feeling that this might get very interesting if I keep going.
And so you make your decision to go to Bayern at 16, which is quite a big leap, isn't it? Because how did they approach you? And when you discussed it with your family, what made you think it was the right move? Because I think there are a lot of kids at that age who would think it was maybe too big a leap and maybe a bit too scary, a bit too grand, because Bayern are one of the biggest clubs in the world.
Yeah, of course. But again, that's maybe a little bit me, some craziness, a little bit of wildness, a little bit of unorthodox, you know. I'm not thinking too much, I'm just jumping into it. And it was something where I just told myself, listen, if I'm 50 years old and I sit there and speak to my kids or my grandkids and I have to give them advice and tell them, guys, you need to go for your dreams, you need to go for what you're good at, I need to try to have done it myself. I need to try to have the experience of pursuing something I really, really love and I think that I'm really, really good at. And if I don't do it, I think the rest of my life I would have had an emptiness in my personality. I don't think my personality will be nowhere near what it is in good and bad. But first of all, it was the love or the dream, pursuing the dream of becoming great, of becoming world class, and it was just there in front of me, and I just had to pick it because I was so lucky that they picked me. So I did it, and I remember when I came home and I was speaking with my father about it, and I was very very quick. I decided, okay, I want to see it. I want to speak to the people. I want to go there. And I remember I went with my father, back then my agent, and we spoke to Rummenigge and Christian Nerlinger, who was back then the sport director. And it was very special because my father, I remember, was very, very, what you say, he had so much respect and he was very, you know, impressed. Yeah. And this sounds a bit cheeky, but I don't remember me being too impressed. I just remember me seeing, yeah, where's the pitch? Okay, where's the dressing rooms? What boots are we playing in? And when can I start, you know? And that was a bit why maybe I was also not thinking too much about the consequences. And then when we came home from that two-day trip or one-day trip, I remember the first moment I walked in the kitchen and I saw my mother. She was at work and we came home in the middle of the day. And when she came home from work, I wasn't there. So when I came home, I remember walking in the kitchen and she was crying. You know, she was talking to my father and she was crying. And then she knew and I also knew. And yeah, that was the start. And that was December 2011. And I made my choice there and I went in the summer 2012 and never looked back.
Well, I guess when you and your dad are there, you're looking at it in very different ways because you just want to play and express yourself and show how good you are.
Yeah.
But you know, your father, I suppose, is looking at it from a, you know, what sort of education and football upbringing will my son receive? And certainly from the outside, you couldn't ask for any better education than growing up in the system at Bayern Munich, right?
No, I think, and this is where I think a lot of people, a lot of football players as well, misunderstands the whole dynamic and the whole setup of Bayern Munich. They say, oh, superstars, they spend a lot of money, they have a lot of money, their merchandise, etc., etc. But if you see the whole, if you see the roots and the DNA and the mentality through the whole club, you see players not back from the 90s, not back from the 80s, players from 70s walking around having jobs as a technical academy director or ambassador of the second team or advisor of the youth academy, all these sort of things. It's so well organized, it's so well analyzed and executed. It's not a coincidence that Bayern Munich is in the top of the world. And when I came and they started speaking about Schweinsteiger, Philipp Lahm, Thomas Müller, Bart Stuber, Alaba, Toni Kroos, there was just some of them coming from the academy, and they were telling me, why not you being the next one? It was crazy, but they still looked me in the eyes and said, why can't you be the next one? That's why you're here. And gave me such a fire, such a desire to show myself and to prove myself. But still, I enjoyed it so much. And to be fair, I'm not missing it. But when I think back of it, it was more beautiful than I felt. And I felt it was very beautiful. You know what I mean? Because when you're in it, you sometimes feel very much under pressure. The time is short. The competition is big. All these sort of things is a factor that you sometimes take in to see things. But when you put all this away and you stand away, I couldn't have dreamed of a better last step of my youth career or first step in my senior career. But yeah, would I have been as good as I am today? Maybe not. But would I have played more in a young age first team games? Probably, you know. So it was a bit of a dilemma. I knew I was good enough with the first team in Bayern Munich, but I saw other young players playing around in different teams and different leagues, and I was like, why can't it be me? And then you start to be, and that this was my biggest biggest weakness, that was the impatience. I wasn't patient enough, and I was very emotional, and I took some, what you say, decisions where I was a bit too rash or a bit too impatient. And that was not only career choices, but it was also human being choices, you know?
Right.
Confrontations where I should have just said, listen, I'm just going to keep going and stick my head in and my chance will come. But at one point, I thought I was good enough.
But Bayern's based around big personalities. Doesn't the environment encourage that, encourage you to stand up for yourself and be a character?
Yeah, for sure. I was thrown in with 17s with the first team. Jupp Heynckes came to me when I've been there for 6 months. He said, listen, kid, you're training now only with the first team and you're playing with the second team. And the plan the club made for me was first season I had to play with the under-19s. Second season you play with the under-23s or the second team. And then the third season you might get into the first team and you get a professional contract. After 9 months, I got my first professional, or after 12 months, was it? I got my first professional contract when I just turned 18. So, yeah, it was so fast, so much, you know. And again, like I said, impatient and not maybe realizing that what I had was very, very good. I thought it was the normal world. I thought it was the normal world to play alongside Toni Kroos or Xavi Alonso, or playing against Mario Götze and Schweinsteiger in training. I thought that was the normal, because that's the only first team football I've ever seen and trained in. And I thought it was normal that coaches was as good as Jupp Heynckes or Guardiola. So when you're 19 then, as I was when I went out on loan, and you don't have a father figure at home who puts the hand on your shoulder and said, listen, you're not in the right state of mind, or you're too emotional, or you're just not performing well enough, so you better relax and wait for your chance, because where you are right now, they love you and they want the best out of you. So relax and wait. I didn't have anybody saying that to me. So I just took a chance and did what I felt at the moment. But looking back, of course, was it a mistake? No, because again, I'm very happy and very, very, I believe so much in who I am today, And it would have been for the choice that I made back then. But was I too rash at some point? Maybe I was, because I was in an environment where I could sit in the office of Uli Hoeneß and he would speak to me and look me in the eyes and say, listen, kid, you're the Bayern Munich DNA. You're made of it. You're formed in it. And you're going to play for Bayern Munich one day. So relax. And as crazy as it sounds, I didn't listen to him enough, you know?
Well, that's something that Pep Guardiola believed as well. And I guess everyone who's read the book Pep Confidential about his first season in charge at Bayern would say one of the things that stands out for all the big characters and for all the big players in there, like Ribéry and Kroos and all the rest of them, is that Guardiola focuses on you as a star of the future. I mean, were you conscious of that at the time?
No.
And no?
No, I didn't see it that way. I only saw it in the way that, oh, I just got to be better. I just got to improve. I just got to keep competing. And I somehow, and I see he also liked it, because I saw it and I felt it. But I somehow enjoyed triggering the big stars. So when I played against Schweinsteiger, Toni Kroos, or Xavi Alonso in training, I liked pushing them. I liked going into the tackles pretty hard, you know, because they would look at me and saying, what the hell are you doing? 18-year-old running around like a fool, and I need to play a Champions League semi-final on Tuesday. Relax, my friend. I wouldn't even think twice. I would do it again, you know. That was the sort of mentality I was running around with. But I was not disrespectful. I was not talking at all, because I knew I had no voice. I knew I had no place in the hierarchy. I was down as the last man. So I had to fight on the pitch. I had to give everything on the pitch. And that's what I did. And that's, I think, also what my coach back then enjoyed a lot. I gave everything I had. And then after, I would do extra training with Dante, with Thomas Müller. We would shoot with Dante. We would do first touch in the air. I would come up. A fitness coach would grab my arm and say, how are your legs? How is your body? Come, we work a little bit. I would just be a part of this big world-class machine. And my mentality would just be like, oh, this is like sex for my mentality, you know? Like, it was so good, was so stimulating, was so intense. And then, of course, with the loss of my father, and like I said before, not having a father figure telling me to relax or stepping back, but just believing in that there's good and bad times. And then after this period, I went in a little bit of a bad time. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't have the same fire. I didn't have the same fuss and buzz about it. And the coach played me a little bit less, but not a lot of, like not much less, but just a little bit. And I'm a guy who think a lot. And then again, I reacted and showed a reaction and took a decision by going to the coach and taking a confrontation that I shouldn't have done. But again, it was me. It was me who wanted to show the world. But again, a guy or guys who have been in the game for 40 years, and then I come an 18-year-old telling them how it's run. Oh, I wasn't telling them how it's run, but telling them what I wanted. You know, today I would just say, what the heck was I doing? But again, it was me. It was me in a raw version.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Are you struggling to find something to watch during lockdown? You've drained Netflix, rewatched all your old favourites, and now you need something new? Well, we're here to help. Join us for Clash of the Titles, the podcast where two movies with something in common go head to head in a fight to the death.
Release the Kraken.
Well, not death. We just decide which one is better.
When they do a long shot of the crowd in the Ivory Tower, it's different to the close-up. And if you look closely, you can see E.T., Mickey Mouse, Chewbacca, Ewoks, and C-3PO.
So when Wolfgang Petersen went to Spielberg, went, yeah, could you maybe re-edit my movie? Steven Spielberg went, yeah. Do you know what I'm probably going to cut out? E-T, mate. I made that.
Find your new favourite movie or revisit an old classic with me, Alex Zane, Vicky Crompton and Chris Tilley. New episodes out every Monday and Thursday.
Clash of the Titles is a Stakhanov production.
Everyone knows how demanding Pep Guardiola was, but after he's demanded and he's seen you giving so much, even if by your own admission you're sometimes a little bit headstrong, a little bit rash, you make it into the first 11 for the DFB Pokal final against Dortmund in 2014. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge game. It's a big rivalry, especially at the time, with Dortmund, because it's been back and forth between them and Bayern for a couple of years. So at that moment, when you start that Pokal final and you play most of it, do you think I've made it?
Yeah, I see what you mean. First, it was a little period where Pep, we played the best football in the world at that time. We played the best football in the world. We didn't manage to go through the semi-final. We got pretty beaten up by Madrid. And a club like Bayern Munich don't get beaten up by Madrid at home. Was it 4-1 or 3-1, 4-1? That just doesn't happen. So I think the coach was a little bit under pressure. Not in the end, Guardiola is never under pressure,
yeah,
because he is the coach he is. He put himself under pressure, but with his qualities, he shouldn't be under pressure. But I think he felt a little bit, okay, if I lose the final against Dortmund, it might be a difficult first year. You know, only the Bundesliga that everybody expects you to win, and then Dortmund taking the cup. You know, so it was a big week until then. I remember his assistant coming up to me, and we were just in the toilets, and I was washing hands, and he came washing hands, and he looked at me in the mirror, and he said, "How are you feeling?" I say, "Yeah, okay, I feel good." He say, "Yeah, just be ready for Saturday," and it was like Tuesday, and I was like, Pep never does his team on a Tuesday if we have to play on a Saturday. Not in the time I knew him. So I was like, what? And then when we got closer, I saw him pushing me and guiding me a lot. And I think I had to play a little bit further front or in the middle than I did. But then day before the game, suddenly Alaba gets an injury. And I remember in the evening he calls me on the room phone or it was a hotel room phone, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, "Yeah, come into my room quick." And he came in and he sat there with two laptops and analyzing the games, and he was showing me some clips, and he said, "I wanted to put you a little bit further front tomorrow, but you're gonna play as a fullback, but with a five." So it was more like a right midfielder.
Right.
Just so you know, sleep good and eat your veggies, you know. And I walked out of the room and I just remember putting on a movie, sleeping, waking up, having the training in the morning with the boxes. You know, I didn't tell nobody, didn't tell no teammate, didn't tell anyone. And then
when
he said it in the, I saw my mother in the morning, I remember, because she came to the game and I saw her in the lobby. We just spoke a little bit. And then I went up in the room, relaxed, had my lunch, pre-match meal, all pretty normal. Then I remember sitting in the bus. Just before we went into the bus, we had the team meeting, and he just put me there and he said, "Guys, just..." And he was not speaking about me, or he was not saying, "Guys, help him or protect him, or it's his first final, blah, blah, blah." He was just telling the team what to do. So he made it very natural, and I remember two or three players in the middle of the meeting just turning their face a bit over the shoulder, looking at me like, you know, and I was just looking straight, trying to keep the face and saying, yeah, and taking it as, yeah, I would expect this, you know, not showing any fear, not showing any nervousness, just taking it as, yeah, I'm expecting to play, I'm good enough to play. And that gave me a lot, because I played good and I played with confidence. But still, that also sometimes makes you not forget, but put your emotions a bit to side. And so I didn't remember it as a particular difficult game to play, because I just had to stick to the plan and stick to my game, because I knew it was good enough. That was my mentality.
So you get further down the line, and you've talked about how much you wanted to play by this point all the time. The following winter, you get loaned to Augsburg, and in fact, you go back and win at Bayern, and you set up the winning goal. But then after that, you end up being loaned to Schalke for a season. I mean, I think sometimes, we've talked about this on our show before, sometimes I think people in England cannot absorb like quite what a big club Schalke is. The fact that they get 60,000 in every week, and there's a pressure there that there's not at a lot of clubs. Was that the point where you at Schalke where you thought, right, I've got to be playing top level football every week, and maybe at the other end of this, maybe I have to move on from Bayern? Or was that something you gradually realised through the season?
I could say yes to that. It was a pretty difficult summer, because my heart was in Munich and Bayern Munich, but my mind wasn't there. And again, like I said, when you're 19 years old, it's so difficult to take a decision without emotions or without impatience, you know. So I took Schalke, and I'm proud to have played for them, because it's an incredible club, incredible big club. And apart from Dortmund, maybe it's the closest you get from a pressure point of view to Bayern Munich in Germany, you know. So it was amazing, but it was a very difficult start I had in Schalke. They had some very good players, and I was a little bit injured in the first game, and the coach then came to me and said, "I'm not playing you." I said, "Yeah, but coach, I'm fine." "Yeah, but I'm not playing you." Because the pressure was so high, you couldn't play people who were not ready. And they won the first 7 games on the run. And I was on the bench or all 7, you know, because the team was just winning. And then I had to fight my way back, and I remember being a bit low on confidence, and really was my first time in my senior career remembering playing, going into a game with low confidence. And that was a really, really tough moment to overcome, because then you just have to wipe it all away, forget where I come from. And people were still saying, yeah, he's from Bayern. But I had to forget all that, forget all my school, forget all my medals, forget all my whatever I had. Just take the boots on, do the simple stuff, work as hard as you can, and then work a little bit more, train as hard as you can, and then do the basics as good as you can, and then you build yourself up. And I came to a point with myself where I said, okay, if it has to take 5 years, it takes 5 years. If it has to take 10 years, it takes 10 years. I'm going to make it to the top, but it's not going to be from today to tomorrow. And I remember getting some sort of peace in myself, some sort of, not anxiousness was going away, but this, yeah, maybe, you know, I forgave myself for not achieving it as fast as I wanted to, you know what I mean? So I somehow made peace with myself of saying, okay, it's a process over 15 years. And I just made a promise to myself that day that I knew probably I wouldn't go back to Bayern as long as Pep was a coach. But yeah, I just remember saying to myself, okay, one day I'm going to play a Champions League game again. And if I play the Champions League game again, I will play a Champions League final. And if I play a Champions League final, I will win it. And that was the promise I made to myself, to play a Champions League game again and then to play a Champions League final. And if it had to take 15 years, it would take 15 years. And until the day, I wouldn't, you know, let go. So I made a long-term target for the first time ever in my life, you know, that the ultimate dream was to play a Champions League final. But first, I had to play one more Champions League game to be able to play a damn Champions League final. And that period in Schalke really made me grow. And the only sad thing about it was that it was through a difficult time. But again, through the toughest time, I have grown the most. And that's also, again, a little bit me. Sometimes I need a tough time to not to wake up, but to realize who I am, what I really want, and where I really want to go. It's just something in me, you know. I don't know, but it's just something in me.
So does that extra bit of patience kind of pave the way for the move to Southampton? Because obviously it's a big thing to come to the Premier League. We know people all over the world watch it, and footballers all over the world watch it. But people looking at Southampton, you can see that the club has helped some players become, with undoubted talent, become superstars, like, you know, Mane, Lallana, people like that. What has the club done to you, and did this all factor into your decision?
So what the club has done that I really appreciate the most is that from day one, they believed in my qualities. And I think the most important for a football player or any sportsman or any human being is that you are surrounded with people who believe in you. But there were also times where they believed more in people in front of me than they believed in me. Didn't mean that they didn't believe in me, but there were times when I was not number one, two, or three in the midfield. I was maybe number four. And I'm very proud that I fought through that situation and through that period and got to show, first of all, myself, that, yeah, I am the number one. And eventually I was made captain, who is maybe the biggest recognition in my career and the biggest approval of my career. But yeah, again, I came into a club and some sort of school and a team with great talents, with great atmosphere with difficulties, yes. But players-wise and qualities-wise, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And I almost want to say that Southampton is becoming my home, you know?
I mean, is that a little bit of a shock, do you think, for players when they arrive in the Premier League sometime, that no matter what big clubs you've played for before and what you've done in your career, when you come into the Premier League, every squad has that depth of quality. So yes, there's not necessarily a guarantee that you get into the first team straight away. Is that something that's hard to deal with for a lot of players, do you think?
I think, yes. What you're saying is absolutely true. I think people sometimes are bought, maybe in Germany, or for these 10, 15 million, and they're bought to be the main guys. In England, you have had a budget where you buy these 10, 15, 20 million guys who is people who has to prove themselves, you know? So it's a bit of a contradiction of what you're expecting and what you're supposed to do. But again, I think the Premier League is the best league in the world to just go out and show what you can do and just get rewarded for it. Because the Premier League is so raw and so world class, but on not on a basic level in terms of quality, but on a simple level. Like it's so straightforward. It's you play hard, you play aggressive, you play straight. There's no bullshit. There's no going around. You just play the game as good as you can, and doesn't matter what team you are. So if you can show your quality, you just go up the ladder. And that's what I felt the first year or two that I was in the Premier League. That if you do well, you can play here for the next 10 years in the best league in the world, in the most competitive league in the world, in the richest league in the world. What bigger dream for a football player? For me, Premier League, best league in the world. Most competitive league in the world, by far.
And so both in terms of that and in terms of you getting the captaincy while you were at Southampton, I mean, it feels to me like this goes back to something you said elsewhere a while back, where you said about your biggest strength maybe not necessarily being on the pitch, but your personality, and that's something that really has come out against Southampton. How much do you think your personality has made you thrive in the atmosphere of the Premier League?
I know that if I have to perform and if I have to, what you say, bring my A game, I need to take the responsibility in the game to bring the A game. And my idea of playing, of who I was always taking responsibility, always in the difficult moments as well. But responsibility is not always taking the ball and dribbling five guys and then trying to score. I think my biggest strength is making all the players better, supporting them, playing the right balls, doing the right runs, fighting for them, feeding them, analysing the game, reading the game, playing the game as it should be played, because there are games where you have to be more tough. There are games where you have to be more composed. There are games where you have to find the space a bit more wide or a bit more inside. So to read the game and to make my teammates better, or the best players in the team even better, that's what I love doing and what I do the best. Of course I have qualities, and of course I know what to do with the ball. But to be the guy who brings the team together and who get the best out of everyone is what I really feel very comfortable in and strong in. And sometimes saying the right thing is not always the easiest thing, you know? You got to take the hit, you got to take the fight, you got to take the confrontation, but you also need to put the arm around. You need to support, you need to be positive, you need to be creative. all these parts of a football player's personality is, I think, is very important, and especially if you want to be a leader, not just for one game, but for 15 years of your career. But mainly it's about responsibility. Take the responsibility and don't try to do it alone, but take the responsibility and get the best people to do the best possible things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I always say that, you know, the cement between the bricks? I always like to say that that's me.
Well, that's it, isn't it? This idea of pulling everyone together. I mean, how much of that comes from what's in you, and how much of that comes from the education you got at Bayern? Because I know you believe really strongly about, at Southampton, everything should be linked together from the under-10s upwards, that you're all part of the same club, that you're all on the same page, and people around the club say that's something you've done really well as captain, the fact that you consider it one rather than, okay, we're the first team and everything else is subordinate to us. How much of that is your personality, and how much of that is what you learned at Bayern about there being a growth and about there being different strata to the club?
I think it's a very good mixture, because even before I came to Bayern, and maybe there's also a reason why I came to Bayern, is because they saw me fitting in the DNA, fitting in the system. And I got confirmed in what I felt and what I was as a human being, as a football player, was good. Because in Bayern, I think you have 25 players taking responsibility in a squad, you know? And in other clubs, you maybe have 10, and some clubs you have 5. And even I had to take responsibility. I had to make sure that the players in front of me and behind me knew what was going on, speaking to them. And then it just goes up to a climax and becomes amazing, you know?
So finally, this was all set to be an incredible summer for you, because you're home in Copenhagen at the moment, a little bit earlier than you would have imagined. But this was going to be an incredible summer for Denmark, really. And I know the national team's always been a massive deal to you since you were a teenager. I mean, we all saw those scenes after you qualified for Euro 2016, and you're very emotional on the pitch after that game against Serbia. And this time around, and obviously it's delayed a year, but it's still going to happen, you've got 3 home games. It's the closest that Denmark are going to get to a home tournament. In terms of championships in Scandinavia, well, you had Euro 92 in Sweden, but I mean, that couldn't happen now because the tournament was so much smaller then, with only 8 teams. How much of a big deal is it to you when you eventually get there to have that almost home tournament in the place where you grew up, in the city where you grew up?
It's a childhood dream. It's massive, and it's also very exciting, you know, just so exciting and so amazing that this will happen here in Copenhagen. And my apartment that I have here in Copenhagen, if you go on the rooftop, you actually see the stadium. And we got a program from the club. So when I had to do my runnings and my exercises, I went around the park, and the stadium is in that park. So I was running around the park.
Yeah.
So I've been since I can remember. I've been on the bike or with a ball in the hand or on my dad's bike up and down the stadium for forever. So that's why when I get emotional playing with the national team, or why I love playing with the national team so much, is because I have history. It's where I come from. And sometimes you can't say it in words. You say it in actions, or you express yourself by feelings. And again, like I said, when you are 19, you don't know how to control your emotions as much, and you don't know how to deal with the emotions as much as you do when you are maybe 24 or 30 or 35. But the whole process of becoming who I am and who I want to be, I enjoy that so much. And in 1 year's time, I know I will be even a better player and a better sportsman. So when the Euro comes, and if I'm performing as good as I can, I hope to be in the squad and playing as many games as possible, and hopefully doing something historical for the country. And that's, again, me dreaming a wild and crazy dream, but that's also me saying, why not? Why not Denmark being a European champion? But again, there is such a big process behind, so it's just not something you say, it's something you do.
And the atmosphere at the Parken, given that it's a relatively small ground, it's close to the pitch. We've seen what it's like, not just for Denmark, but for Copenhagen in those Champions League games. It's quite intense, isn't it? It could be an advantage for you guys.
It's nice. It should be intense. It should be a hot atmosphere. So that's very good. It's nice to play there.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.